Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Laura Levine with Shiloha Radio, airing live from Anacortes on Tuesday, March 16th, on Fidalgo Island. This is it. This is our last show, our last episode of our Relationship Wisdom series with Al Turtle. It has been quite a rich time, those seven talks. Actually, we've had eight talks total. And today, we are going to put it all together and do some summarizing of what we've done and explore the reason we've done all of this, which is to get to vintage love. Excuse me, I got a frog in my throat. So, Al, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hi.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm good, although I have something in my throat.
It sounds like you got a frog in the throat.
Yeah, I've been talking too much today, I think. You might have to do this without me. So let's do again for the last time a little summary of what we've done the past 7 weeks and why we've done it. So do you want me to do it and then you can jump in? Or why don't you do it? I've done all of this summarizing. Would you like to do that, Al?
Well, okay. I'll kind of see what I can do.
Okay.
As I learned to solve the problems in my second marriage, current marriage, last marriage, I stumbled upon a whole pile of things. I didn't stumble upon them, I dug them up. And so this series was, we basically started with the entire map of what goes on in relationships. All this stuff is on my website at turtlecounseling.com. And I also
and
get it.
And more. There is so much on there. So much reading to do, so much information. So please go and peruse Al's website. There's so much going on.
We also have put there all the files of these conversations that we've had, which are about an hour long, so you can download them, put them on a CD or in an iPod, and listen to them in a car.
Right.
But basically, what I discovered was why people fall in love and what they're looking for when they fall in love. But the much more important thing was all of that stuff is doable. You can get there. You can make it happen. But you can't get there and make it happen without a lot of journey, with a lot of work. And what I did is basically was able to map out the pathways and what are the things you have to learn. And so these classes have been, class number 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, were about parts of what you have to learn, more specific with skills. And the first thing you have to learn is that you and your partner both have a co-resident being inside your reptilian brain that unconsciously and without your planning at all will take over when it's frightened.
And that's what Al calls the lizard.
And we call that the lizard. Actually, my wife gave it that name. The lizard. She said, my lizard woke up. And we started being aware of how that little part of our brain operates completely independently from our thinking, and that we have to learn how to take care of it. In a culture that threatens the lizard, that threatens us in order to get obedience. And couples don't want threat. They want to get away from that, and that's one of the reasons they fall in love. So that was the class two.
And when we fall in love, if I can jump in there, when we fall in love, the funny, tricky thing is that we fall in love and we think we've got it.
Yep.
We think this is it. This other person is going to give me all that I've been born looking for, which Al calls the biological dream. And we think this is it. This person has given me that, and it's never going to go away. And that's the romantic love stage. But then, pretty soon, we find ourselves in what Al calls the power struggle years. And
yep.
that's where we kind of try to threaten the love out of our partner. We want to get back to that romantic love, or we want to get to the vintage love, and that's what this series has been about.
Yep. And I think that most people, when they go through the power struggle, they think there are only two choices. One is to batter their partner into doing what they need, one way or the other, or to give up relationships. And what I was clear was that is not the only choices. There are actually three choices. But the third choice, which I call door number one, is the way to vintage love, is the way to making those wonderful feelings in romantic love continue and last. And that's what we're talking a little bit about today. What is it like when you finally get there? Or what does it look like? When you finally get into a real life where you're living the way you dream when you fall in love. And the other piece of it is that when you're born, I think you have the same dream. You have the same dream of wanting safety and all those five pieces, but you have no way of putting it into words. But you still have that dream. So this is kind of a life dream. Been throughout your whole life, and you have a choice of either falling in love every so often and waking up to that dream, of giving it up, of living without it, or going after it and getting it.
And when Al talks about living without it, he means that you can either divorce, which would be door number three, right?
Living without it, to me, is like moving into a relationship that is loveless.
That's right. So that's door number two. Door number three would be just leaving the relationship, and door number two is what do you call it, the cesspool?
I often call it door number two. It's the place where you go when you give up. It's where 90-some percent of couples end up going.
Oh, my gosh.
So it's where they live together and they say everything's fine and everything seems reliable, but they don't even know each other and they aren't very happy. And as you reminded me at one point, that sometimes it's an affair, or, in fact, I saw another one yesterday, the police coming to the house that wakes people up from door number two and says, maybe you better change the relationship. I listened to this man last night. He was arrested.
You mean a client, someone who was in your office?
Yeah.
Okay.
He was arrested for physical violence. The only problem was when he was arrested, the only sign of violence was his arm had been bitten six different times and there was blood running down his arm. But he was arrested. And it was
his partner bit him and he got arrested?
Yep. Mm-hmm. And he said to me, all I want is to get my wife back and go back to the way we were. And I got into his face and said, the way you were was destructive and dangerous. This incident with the police, you'll probably look back and say, oh, it started to wake us up. You know, I think someday you'll thank the police for doing this, even though it may seem pretty crazy what they did. At least it woke you up from a pattern that was ugly. And when you say you want to go back to that ugly pattern, I think you're a bit crazy.
You think he means he wants things to go back to the way they were when they first met, those first few weeks?
No, he's saying he wants to go back to the dream.
Right.
But all he knows how to do now is go back to the power struggle. Because he doesn't know how to get the dream anymore.
So what are you going to do with him?
Well, what am I going to do with him?
Yep.
Depends upon whether he comes back or not. If he comes back, I'll probably introduce him to the idea of vintage love. I'll probably introduce him to the idea of of why he so badly loves his wife, even though she bit him 6 times. And he does. You know, the beautiful thing about people, and this is maybe in my office, I see it a lot, is that people really do love each other. But they act terribly sometimes. And people only see the act sometime and forget that the acts are driven by love, frequently. And I in the office can see that love just shining in a behavior where she was biting him.
Right.
Pretty clumsy way to express love, but then, after all, the lizard was pretty active at that point in both of them.
Yeah.
So I'll probably begin to teach him some of the skills that he's missing that led him to this state, this situation.
And I think the idea of those three doors is so important because... Mm-hmm. Just because you're in door number 2 doesn't mean you have to stay there. It doesn't mean either that you have to wait for the police to come or for your partner to have an affair or for you to have an affair. If you know that once you're in, it's a two-way door, it's not a door that shuts once you get in, you can get back out.
Right, right. Sadly, the majority of people don't come back out.
But well, I don't know that they know that they can. And also, I don't know that they remember what else, what, I mean, in order to put in the effort to learn the skills, you have to believe that there's a payoff.
Yep. Yep.
And sometimes yep. No pain, even if it means numbing, is all they think they can have.
Absolutely. And I never, to me, I validate those people in that place, and as you heard me say, you asked me, what am I going to do with this guy? Well, the question is, what does he want to do?
Mm-hmm.
Does he want to come back and talk some more about this? Or does he want to choose to go into door number 2? Or does he want to give up and find someone else? This is his second partner. So he's probably going to go around through the cycle of the map of relationship a second or third or fourth or fifth time until he chooses one of those other two doors.
So in your experience, once you have someone in your office and they say, we've been in door number 2 or we're just out of the power struggle years and we want to learn vintage love, do you have them, how do we use all these skills and all this knowledge that you've given us through the past 6 weeks? Do we sometimes pull one and sometimes pull another? Do we, how do we put it practically into use?
Well, practically, you've got to start learning those skills. The first thing, I think, the first most common skill between two people is how they talk with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And that's communication. And you can express all the good and the bad things, all the, let's say, all the things that are encouraging to the biological dream and all the things that are signs that you're not going to even work on the biological dream, you can express them in the way you talk. And so the first thing I do with couples after introducing them to the feeling of what it's like to be in the biological dream, that's what I do in the first session. Without their knowing it, I bring them into a room that is safe, that is not only safe but fairly reliable, but is not only reliable, but is open and respectful of people's differences. And is not only reliable and open and safe, but respectful of people's choices. And that's really what the biological dream is a lot about.
Right, 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 right.
And so I do that in the first session. I basically keep one partner shut up while I listen to the other partner and I mirror and validate that partner over and over and over again. In the presence of their partner.
Yes.
And then I switch and say, let's go look to the other one, and I do the same thing to the other. So I'm literally validating huge amounts of disagreement between the two of them.
Mm-hmm.
And they're experiencing that it's possible to have that happen. And so they usually come back, and then the next thing I do is teach them mirroring, communication. so they can start to take the skills that I'm using home.
Right.
And then
we have a caller. Let's take this caller and see
sure.
if we can answer their question.
Sure, let's hear a caller.
And I just got an email from Julie saying that we both sound like we're not loud enough, so I'm going to raise my voice. But I think that's just what happens for us in this show. So hold on. Let's bring someone in the air.
Okay.
Hi. You're on the air. Who is this? 360 area code. Hello? Hello? Wow, this is like a sitcom. Every time I bring someone on the air, there's nobody there. Hello? Well, let's keep going and we'll see what happens if they come back, okay?
I'm sorry that we can't hear them or we can't talk to them because people are always fun.
Okay, well, hopefully they'll try again. I'm going to keep an eye on the switchboard and try to bring him back.
Okay.
So, okay, let's keep going. And I'm hoping that sometime today, too, we have a little time to talk about purpose because that was important as well in the biological dream.
Yeah.
All right.
So where would you like to go next?
Well, let's see.
Clients. I often say that to clients. I say, okay, I work for you. Where do you want to go?
Okay.
Because I'm really working on their autonomy. I'm really working on respecting that their life and their action are their choices. And,
right. So you model the skills during the session.
So I'm modeling it.
Yeah. Hold on. Let me try to bring this person in again.
Excuse me?
Hello, can you hear me? Hello, you're on the air.
Laura?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't know I was on the air. It's Lori.
Hi, Lori.
Hi.
You're on the air. Did you want to talk with Al?
Well, I'm just so excited to be listening. I didn't know I was on. I'm just listening because my computer didn't work. But it's so exciting because I just get to read it. I'm always teaching, but today I'm home.
Great. Well, you know, this is our last episode. So if you want a chance to talk with Al, there you go. He's right here.
Yes, and I think I'm just catching up to learn about all the dream of safety and membership and all that. I guess I have questions about cultural differences and how to bridge those gaps if there isn't that understanding, maybe obvious understanding, assume that you understand something and then you don't.
So you're talking about two partners with different cultural backgrounds.
Yes. And how to get that communication going?
Well, it's a good question. What do you do when you have... My experience is that really two cultural backgrounds is what we always are. Men are from Mars, sure. Women are from Venus. Women are from Venus, men are from Mars. I don't care.
Yes.
So it's
hey, Al, we need you a little bit louder because this is important. We want to hear you.
It's the same problem, I think, whether you get into cultures such as a man I knew who was a Buddhist who was married to a Jehovah's Witness.
Hmm.
And there's some really big cultural differences. And one of the biggest mistakes is that you think you know where your partner's coming from. There's a pattern. Excuse me for laughing, but it's a beautiful pattern that comes out of infancy that you think people can read your mind. You actually say a part of a sentence expecting that they know what the rest of the sentence is.
And you think that if someone loves you enough, they will know how to finish your sentence.
That's right. Which is an infant thing brought into adulthood. The infant thing is that when you're a baby, you think that if you cry, someone will know what you want. Now you bring that into adulthood, and you really think that if they loved you, they would read your mind. They can't. So part of growing up is becoming aware of that. And it's quite a challenge to realize that unless I put it into words pretty clearly, my partner can't read my mind, except under very rare circumstances. So I better admit that. But most of the time, my wife will say, or I'll say, why don't you pick that up? And she'll look at me and say, what the hell is that? And I've just slipped into that place of thinking she could read my mind. Particularly as you get closer to each other, the temptation to do this is even higher. And then you get angry because they can't read your mind, which is really childish, even though I did it for years. So that's one risk. So you have to somehow be able to say to them, well, no wonder you didn't know what I was saying because I didn't say it. You know, you've got to somehow validate them for not being in your mind. The other piece is this. I was raised by parents who never told the truth. And as a child, what do you do when your parents never tell what is congruent? Well, you survive. And the way you survive, now, why didn't they tell the truth? Simply because they were extremely polite people. And polite people never tell the truth. They always say the right thing, what they think is the right thing to say. But they don't say the truth. They aren't candid. And so as a kid, you learn that when your mom is saying, I love you, that could be the phrase right before she tells you how you've done something wrong. I love you, but, you know, so you basically learn not to listen to their words, but to build in your mind an idea of what they're up to. That's just a survival technique, to build that picture of your mind. I used to be able to have arguments with my wife as I was driving home in the car, and she would answer back right out of the steering wheel because I had built a picture of her in my head. A very durable picture. Well, the mistake is to believe that your picture is correct. As you get closer and closer to your partner, you need to replace that picture with more accurate information. And I know I came home that day. I had prepared a perfect argument with her. This was years ago. And I delivered my first line of my argument, and she came back with something I hadn't planned. It didn't come out of the steering wheel. And I was aware, really in my face, that she was not the human I imagined her to be. She was somebody else, much more exciting and much more cutting edge than this picture that I had built because I developed that habit as a child. So when you're dealing with a cultural difference, you have to build an absolutely superb communication system. One that has really good boundaries in it, boundary skills in it, so that when you never tell your partner what they're doing, you tell your partner what you think they're doing, and then you end that with a question, by the way, is that anywhere close to what you are doing?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you're open to being, having your information set improved.
And Lori, are you talking also about the idea that the difference in culture involves difference in values?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and not even knowing what all the values were, maybe.
Yeah. Well, that's part of the excitement. Let's go find out what they are.
Well, I love this idea of being brave enough to see beyond my own picture.
Yeah.
And that does make it way more exciting and way more adventure journey.
Oh, yeah. That's actually, when you get into vintage love, life is very exciting. But as you move, you keep... I think of life as being a long period of waking up. It's like childhood and young adulthood puts us to sleep. And we think people are who we think they are. And we have to wake up. Things have to wake us up. such as this guy who got arrested. Things have to wake us up, and then we say, oh, by the way, who are you?
Yeah, and I love the idea that you just brought forth, that vintage love is exciting, because it is so easy to think that vintage love is like a parking space.
Oh, yeah. Well,
you know, and the idea of learning someone. I love the idea of learning someone.
Well, it's the difference between door number two and door number one. Door number two is a place where people go and numb themselves out. So that's what we mostly see in older couples. But vintage love is nothing like that. You have no idea what your partner's going to do next.
Because your partner feels safe enough to be him or herself fully, which is not always predictable.
Which is 100% predictable if you knew everything about them, but you don't yet.
Right.
They've got new twists, and so when they do something strange, what you call strange. I love that idea that no one ever does anything strange.
Yeah, it always makes sense to them.
Strange. They always do something that's 100% predictable if you understood where they were coming from. And so when you think they're strange, really what you're saying is, I don't know who they are. I'm uninformed. The act of seeing something in my partner that's strange is just a cue to me to know that I'm uninformed. If I was informed about her, I could predict what she was doing. So instead of blaming her for doing something odd, I go into interview mode and say, okay, I didn't expect that. Wow. Okay, so what's going on for you that led you to do that? And as Sandra was saying last night, we were chatting about this, and she said one thing about vintage love is you're constantly in a state of inquiry about each other rather than in a state of catching each other.
Oh, see, that's perfect. That's beautiful. And that's such a paradox to the idea of, again, what is so easy to think vintage love is about. I mean, being permanently in a state of inquiry. That's beautiful.
Yep. And that means, Laurie, that means that a person from a different background is even more interesting than people from a similar background.
So definitely. But you framed it in a way that makes me want to keep asking the questions instead of giving up.
Yeah, or at least being curious.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I give that phrase that all people make sense all of the time. And you can either know their sense or not know their sense, but they're still making sense, so that leads you to being curious. How the heck did this person do that? They just did it. And there's a tendency in our culture that if they do something odd, we turn away from them. And in vintage love, if they do something odd, you turn towards them. This connects with a lot of learning about marriages, that successful marriages are ones in which when your partner does something peculiar, you turn towards them. It's a little bit like Sandra does something odd, and I immediately pick up a microphone and run right over to her and say, oh, tell me all about that.
That's beautiful.
Because once she told me all about it, then I won't think it's odd. It'll be different from what I do, but odd indicates that I was uninformed.
Mm-hmm. And your own lizard has to be fairly at peace in order to turn towards someone when they've just done something odd.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's very possible their odd behavior triggers your lizard into being terrified.
Yeah.
Well, then you have to go take your lizard and calm it down and then come back and say, tell me why you did that.
I was thinking it would take a lot of energy to be at that place of vintage love.
Oh, it's exhausting. Not to be at not at vintage love. At vintage love, it's very peaceful, very relaxing. But on the way, on the journey here, and actually in the power struggle was where the most energy was used, as I look back.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
As
so
I
how did you know?
Do
you wake up one morning and say, okay, we're there?
Yeah. Actually, I woke up one morning and said, I'm going to stop fighting the idea that we're there. Sandra always thought we were there.
Really?
Yeah. She thought we'd been there for about 4 years. I didn't agree with her.
So she would tell you, I think we're there, and you would say,
yep.
No, I don't think we are?
Yep. We never agree on anything. So that was kind of like fun. I'd sit there and she'd say, I think we're there. And I'd say, not me.
See, you guys, did you all hear that? We never agree on anything. So you're talking to a man here who really knows what he's talking about, and he's talking to you about vintage love, and he's telling you we never agree on anything. So talk about myth debunking. It's beautiful. I mean, it's beautiful. We never agree on anything. Nobody is submitting. We're autonomous.
Yep.
And we're willing and excited to inquire and be surprised.
Yep.
You know one thing I want to add, Lori, you're still there?
Yeah.
You know one thing I want to add, and I'm not sure if it fits within those seven steps, but I think it's valuable, is the idea of setting your intent. And tell me what you think about that, Al. The idea of if you're entering into maybe an evening of communication that you're a little worried about because of the cultural differences and your lizard is kind of squirming a little bit, I think it's very powerful to set the intent at the beginning of the conversation that says, my intent is to inquire about you, to discover about you, and to keep my heart open as we navigate this discovery.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
then have your partner. Are you
I
there?
I think that's a micro wedding vow.
Yes. Oh, gosh. I love that. A micro wedding vow. You know, Chris and I did that yesterday as we embarked on this working day together. And we know that there's 250 ways that we can get snagged. And our lizards can go up. And so that's it. It's a micro wedding vow. You say, for the next 5 hours, my intent is...
Yeah, my intent
and then
is
you
to
go
learn
about
all about
your...
this for you. Yeah. Or it may be that you say, this is my vow, I'm going to work on it, but I'm going to have to take 2 hours off because I'm exhausted right now.
Yes.
But I still have that vow. You know, a wedding vow doesn't mean you got it immediately. In fact, I just put up on my website a kind of a fun wedding vow.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, I just put it up just about 30 minutes ago.
Ooh, I love that. Can you post that onto our Facebook page?
You can put it anywhere you want.
Okay.
Somebody asked me, said, what would a wedding vow look like if you included vintage love and biological dream in it? And I said, oh, that's a good idea.
Oh, I love that.
So I did it. I wrote it, and then he said, oh, my God, move that up to the front of your wedding website. And I said, well, oh, I don't know. And then I handed it to my wife, and I said, edit this sucker.
Okay, well, you know what about this sucker? I'm going to read it. Can I read it right now?
Sure.
Okay, I'll try not to mispronounce too much. I, John, take you, Amy, to be my partner on this journey of life. I commit to grow and learn until I know how to create safety and trust for us both and recover it when it's lost. I guarantee I will get there with you. Wow, I don't know if I can do this without choking up. Okay, let's keep going. I commit to your needs for space, even from me. I will continue to work so that whenever you need a break from anyone or from me, I will help you get it. I also commit myself to your connection needs. I will continue to work so that even when we are apart, you will be able to trust that I will come back to you. I will grow, learn, until we create a reliable partnership that supplies both our needs for connection. I guarantee I will get there with you. So that's a reliable membership. I commit myself to your needs to be different and to sharing your differing ways of seeing and valuing everything. I will continue to work until we both feel safely connected in a space where we treasure how different we are and will always be. I guarantee I will get there with you. I commit myself to your need to always make your own choices for yourself, your body, your property, your thoughts, your emotions, your time, and your worth. I will continue to work until both of us experience full respect from each other. I guarantee I will get there with you. And I commit myself to being a partner in nurturing your soul, its purpose, and its journey on this earth. I will continue to work to help make this world a better place for us both, having been in it, together and separately. I guarantee I will get there with you. That was purpose. I commit myself to building and recovering love with you for the rest of our lives. I guarantee I will get there with you. I will do my best. Well, that's a winner.
That was kind of fun.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, it was kind of a fun exercise.
Wow, I'm so glad you brought that up because I hadn't seen it, and it was really perfect to read it for this.
Yeah, thank you.
No, thank you.
Really, the challenge is when people fall in love, that's what they want in specifics. That's one way of looking at it. But they don't necessarily commit to go get it.
Right.
And they frequently go to get it, you know, it's kind of like this power struggle is all about I'm going to get it over your dead body.
Yeah.
And that's just clumsy. That's just so clumsy. You know, and a divorce is nothing more than saying I've given up hope getting it with you, but I still want it with somebody. And that's kind of clumsy, too. I don't say it's wrong. I just say I think of it as clumsy.
Well, it's also a lot of time spent.
Yeah.
And money and energy and years going by.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I think that years ago, we used to work 20 times harder, 30 times harder, 40 times harder. But at this point, we work much less, but we get much more out of it. Because it's just more efficient. In other words, we're not wasting our time spending energy doing stuff that doesn't work so much, so often.
Right. And you recover more quickly.
Excuse me?
And you recover more quickly.
Oh, much quicker. We were talking about we sometimes occasionally get into something where there's a bit of a conflict still, but it lasts 3 hours or 6 hours rather than 6 weeks.
Yes, and it can last 6 weeks, can't it? Oh, my gosh.
Or 6 years.
Oh, gosh. Wow, well, that was really wonderful for you to say micro wedding vows and for us to be able to read that. That was great. Mm-hmm. Does that help, Lori?
Thank you so much. It gives me so much hope and encouragement and makes me want to work and play at it.
Uh-huh.
Good.
I like that because the word hope is so important. And if you know, if I looked at the beginning of my life, there were many times when I just got hopeless. The idea that it was impossible came to me. And I don't think I will ever get rid of that occasional thought of this is hopeless.
Yeah.
But when I finally realized, oh, this is just a pattern, it's a process, it takes a time, it takes learning, then I began to say, okay, all we have to do, we don't have to arrive at the goal, we just have to make the next step, because the next step creates hope.
Mm-hmm.
It's when you do nothing that you feel hopeless. You know, people divorce when they think it is hopeless. All you have to do is one tiny little thing, and you can actually put off a divorce. Because people will hang on as long as there's a fragment of hope. And hope is made in the body, in the lizard, and in the reptilian brain, saying, yeah, it may be bad, but there's hope that it'll get better.
But then you've got to learn the skills. You don't want to live in door number two where you have maybe that little sliver of hope or no hope. Or
you give up hope there.
You give up hope. You want hope to fuel you towards learning the skills you need.
Yep. Yeah. At least that's how I see it. Remember, this is just what I've learned. This is not the fact.
I know.
This is just one way of looking at it.
Yep.
And it's a congruent way of looking at it, and so I present it to people. And when they come to my office or call me on the phone, they get somebody who believes in it.
Right. So let's talk about purpose a little bit here, because that's important.
Well, purpose is a little tricky in that, as I kind of figured out the four parts, safety, reliable membership, autonomy, and diversity, I was still had a sense that something was left out. And I happened to be studying African cultures. And I was brought to their awareness that they believe that all humans are born genius. And it is the job of the society to help the child recognize what their unique genius is. That the genius is already in us when we're born. The genius for something.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the job of the culture to help the child develop their genius. And that the reason the society does this is what I was learning from Western Africa, is because if you are in line with your purpose, with your genius, you will be producing 20 times as much and enjoying it 500 times as much. If you're doing what you don't like, what you don't feel is your thing, yeah, you may be very productive, but you won't be anywhere near as productive for the culture as if you were doing what you're designed for. Now, where does this show up? It shows up in midlife crisis. It shows up in marriage somewhat after you've solved most of the other problems. People begin to say, what the heck am I here for? It certainly begins to show up as you get into the ages of 50 and 60 and you start seeing people around you dying.
Mm-hmm.
And you begin to look at them and say, hey, did they do anything in this lifetime?
Well, Al, that's a little bit of like a metaphor for door number two. A crisis comes, and on a personal level, we want to go to our own vintage love.
Yep. That's an interesting thought.
You know, with ourselves.
I'm just saying that purpose begins to surface.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have a couple, you know, the purpose is the idea of going to your kid and saying, I wonder what you want to do when you grow up. And the same thing is when you go to your partner and say, well, who are you going to be when you grow up? And how do I help you do it now that we're both grown up? And frequently you find somebody who's in relative despair because they're in a job they hate. And so you as a partner sometimes are there to say, well, why don't you do something you like? Rather than something you're told you have to do. And so part of nurturing ends up with this kind of thing where you start to nurture each other's goal in life. And it's often, and this is one thing I often worry about a little bit, because I think that if you take care of people and they develop great relationships, they might find goals in life that have nothing to do with each other.
Yep.
And so partner A might say, my goal in life is to service people in South Africa. And partner B says, my goal is to service people in Alaska. And that's a long trip.
Yep.
But it doesn't seem to happen very often. But anyway, I just kind of notice it because it surfaces. I don't push it. I just make sure that it's there so that I kind of keep it as a placeholder for people to notice. That sometimes your partner is distressed because you're telling them to conform to something they don't want to do in life.
Or they don't want to do anymore.
Anymore. And you're saying, but you have to earn money. And they say, I want to play the flute.
Yep, and that's when the lizard needs a little petting, because of course it's scary if your partner who's always brought in $100,000 all of a sudden wants to just go play the flute.
Yep.
It's scary.
Lizard gets scared. Yep. So I'm just saying I put it in there because if you don't notice it, it sometimes just erupts and causes trouble all over the place. But there's a competing concept in Western cultures that a child is born completely blank and you just write on it? I think I remember hearing that the word instruction means to pack in, to build structure in, and the word education means to lead out. So you, when you educate somebody, you're bringing out of them what they're already kind of half know. And when you're instructing them, you're trying, I mean, this is a joke, it's somewhat humorous, but the idea is that we're trying to lead people to do what they're designed to do, rather than we go around telling them what they should do. So purpose is just an interesting background.
Yeah, and I see how it would come after everything else has been worked out, because I think to hear your own voice enough to know that you're looking for your purpose or you have found a new purpose, you have to have, your lizard has to be safe. You have to have learned the notion of diversity, autonomy, reliable membership that says, you know, if I tell her I want to start weaving baskets, she's not going to leave me. And when all these are in place, then it's almost like getting all your little safety nets set up. And now you can say, okay, well, now that I know all this, here's the true me coming out. What are we going to do with that?
The concept in Africa is the job of the society is to create the first four steps of vintage love in a child before they get to be 12 or 13.
So that's safety, reliable membership, diversity, and autonomy.
So rather than what our culture does, which is tries to get rid of all four of those, they are very much interested in saying, if a child doesn't feel safe, it's the responsibility of the adults. If a child doesn't feel they belong, the community has failed. In fact, they think the Western culture with homeless people is clearly dying because they're people who don't belong. The failure of the Western culture. And diversity, my God, they do a beautiful job of being aware, at least in some of the Western Africa groups, and they do the same thing in the outback of Australia, as far as I know, of being aware that everybody is different each day they wake up in the morning because they've been on an interesting journey that last night. And so part of the greeting is, I greet the Great Spirit that comes here and has had experiences. Who are you today? So they're really built into that. In fact, one of the concepts that they have is that they believe that you can't dream it without actually experiencing it. So they believe you've gone there, whatever you dreamt. Now, that's a pretty radical thought to us people from the West. But what it really means is every day you've got a new human being you're waking up next to. And you have to be ready for it. And they believe that everybody does what they choose to do. So they're already kind of designed for this. These are much more ancient cultures than ours. You know, so they do some beautiful jobs. And they do, and Eastern Africa does some absolutely horrible jobs.
Right.
But, you know, it depends upon which indigenous culture you're looking at. But so purpose is something they really believe in. And I was aware it's not a connection in the lizard, and it's not in our cortex. It's, I think, in our connection to the spiritual. That's where you find purpose.
Yeah.
And I'm going to kind of leave it at that right now, because it gets pretty wild. I don't spend a great deal of time in it, but enough so that I feel comfortable with it.
Yeah, and it's important to bring it up, because it's important to know that if someone, I think, if I understand it correctly, is that if partners, I've learned the skills and I've gone through what you call the university of life, and they find themselves in what they believe is vintage love, and all of a sudden somebody wakes up and says, hey, you know, I've rethought all of this and I want something different. It's important to know that this is part of the biological dream. It doesn't mean that all of a sudden everything is something's wrong.
Right. Correct. That's I like that. And you know, generally what I think is if you think there's something wrong, it's an invitation to dialogue. It's an invitation to talk. Because just because you think you should go to South Africa and you think you should go to Alaska doesn't mean that's where you're going to go. You still may be able to refine
I think that's when it's important to start speaking in essence as far as what that person's purpose is, you know, the work of essence versus form. What is the essence of what you want? And it's very possible that if you want to go serve the people in Alaska and I want to go serve the people in Africa, our essence is possibly very much more compatible than our form.
Exactly. I like that kind of concept. My purpose, the closest we can get to my purpose, and the way you know you're on your purpose is because it excites you. Every time you get close to it, you get excited.
Yeah.
The best
and
we know
scared.
The best we know that my purpose is that I open doors for people. I am a doorman.
That's what my
job is. So if I ever see anybody whose door is closed, they're stuck, they feel hopeless, I get excited. Now, I've done that all my life. Why do I do that? It's got to be my purpose.
Yeah. And what a joy to help people find their purpose.
Yep.
And to, you know, to do that as a profession and then in our intimate relationships to nurture that.
Yep. I think the most beautiful thing for me is my development was people would tell me that the door is closed. They'd say, you can't do that. You can't have a happy marriage. You can't do this. And some part of me, some spiritual part of me said, bull, yes, you can. Now let's see how.
Yeah, and that's the door opening.
And that's the door opening. So if I look back in the sections of books that I've always loved all my life, the peak part of a book that I really love the most would be a door opening event. I just am drawn to those with excitement.
Possibilities.
Yep.
And that's why door number three is so important to you.
Yep.
Well, we have compiled quite a wealth here. We have, really. I mean, I'm just really, really proud and happy of what we've done. We've managed to keep it structured enough that it follows a roadmap, and yet flowy enough that we've been able to have fun and move a little bit from the path. So,
mm-hmm.
You know, I'm really, really, really happy with this. Let's see, we have a few minutes left. So what would be important to share in those last 4 or 5 minutes that we haven't yet? Or, let's see here. Vintage love. I think it's really great to talk, and maybe it's my own filter, but I love the idea of debunking the myth that vintage love is placid and everything is set once and for all, and we know our partner, so now we just get to sit with them and hold hands in front of their fireplace. That's one piece that I take from this. That's really
so
important.
That really touches you, that idea that vintage love is still a vibrantly alive state rather than a frozen state.
It does so much, and we don't need to spend much time on it because it's just my thing, but there's something about that going into this program I did not expect, and it really, really touches me.
Well, good. I'm glad you got that from it. I never know what anybody who's listening will get from it.
Well, of course. And the idea also that, you know, we can jump out of door number two, I think that's huge.
The thing that touches me always the most, because it really changed my life, after I studied the map, I changed my attitude towards people. I began to be able to see how they're all hunting vintage love. Everybody. I began to see how how, and I began to like them because they were working towards vintage love. The people who are in falling in love, they're wide awake to vintage love. They're just glorious to be around. I used to make fun of them, thinking they were kind of childish and stupid. You know, they're just foolish. It's all the infatuation. I don't do that anymore. I admire them. I know they're going to hit trouble, but I admire what they're awake to. I did the same thing about people who are in the power struggle. People, almost everyone comes into the office, they're in the power struggle. Well, they're still trying to get vintage love. They're still awake to it, but they're using techniques that don't work. They're exhausting themselves, doing stuff that really doesn't work at all. But they're still awake to it. And people who are divorcing, they come in and they say, well, Al, you don't want us to divorce. I'm saying, no way. If you want to divorce, go right ahead. You're going to have to go through these steps and this step and step and so forth. But at least you're still alive to vintage love, the idea of getting the biological dream as a reality in your life. And the people who are out there single, who've tried a relationship and struggled and, you know, chosen the divorce door, I like them. You know, because there's a part of them, the reliable membership part, that's going to wake them up and put them in connection with another person again. Because we're not designed to live alone. But still, they have within them the wise sense that what was going on during the power struggle is somehow wrong. And they're right. They're right. That stuff is awful. And the people who are, of course, in vintage love are fun to be around. And the people who are in the University of Life are a joy. And the people who are
in the septic tank, they don't come see you.
They don't come see me, and pretty much they kind of just meld into the background as a group of gray people.
I like that.
Who may on some day become colorful, but that's up to them. And I'm not running the world anymore. So I honor them for being where they're at. And I see the ones, I got plenty of work.
And in a way, you know, when you say that, you're using your diversity and autonomy skills.
Sure.
And say, you know, they're gray and that's who they are.
Yeah. The only problem at all about them is when you talk with them, they get mad at you. Because you're in vintage love and they don't believe it exists.
Right. Well, it's painful.
So they try to knock you down. But you've got the skills, so they can't.
Yeah.
All they can do is try.
Okay, so we're going
to... It's a matter of learning to love a lot of people.
I'm sorry, I missed that. So can you say that again?
I think what the lesson I kept from the whole thing is I learned to love a lot more people.
Yes. Yes, I fully get that. Yes, yes, yes. And, you know, living in a place of vintage love, it goes further than just Sandra. It's part of who you are, so that's how you see the world.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Al, it's been a joy.
I know one thing.
Okay, make it quick, because they're going to kick us off the air.
Quickie. Something was reminded last night. There's a sound to vintage love.
Oh, my gosh.
There's a sound to romantic love.
Okay, go. Do it.
Romantic love sounds like an excited puppy going around going, yip, 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 or barking or just excited. Vintage love sounds like a cat lying next to you purring.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
It's just a thought.
I love that. So... all of these series, and we're going to fix, or Al is going to fix the sound so that they're all really easy to listen to, are going to be on my site, on Al's site. You can listen to them over and over again. You can contact Al at turtlecounseling.com. You can find me at lauraleving.com. You can find us on our Facebook Relationship Wisdom series. Thank you. All of you who have listened in, thank you most of all to you, Al, for sharing so much of you during this show. And let's all keep in touch. Let's all go to Vintage Love. I will announce next week's show really quickly because I'm going to get booted off the air here in a second. Next week, we resume our regular programming. And it's a little sad for me because I'm going to miss talking with Al. Let's see. Next show is called Let's Talk About Focus and Paying Attention. And our guest is going to be Maggie Jackson, who wrote the book Distracted. So meet me here next Tuesday at noon. But Al, I will miss you next Tuesday at noon.
It'll be a change.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
I think we've done something important here, and I'm really proud of it. And I thank you very much for. Bye, everyone. Have a great week.
And everyone, love.
Love.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye, Al.